As New York continues to trend bluer and bluer, more often than not, the state's meaningful political battles are happening in the Democratic primaries. And this past June's municipal primaries, which included races in Buffalo, Rochester, Syracuse, and New York City, can help us better understand where power rests in the Democratic Party and where it could be headed in the future. To interpret these tea leaves, we're joined once again by Monica Klein, a founding partner of Seneca Strategies, a progressive political consulting firm, and she ran this year's campaign in Albany to increase taxes on wealthy New Yorkers. Welcome back to the show, Monica.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for joining us. So when you think about the Democratic primaries from June, how do you parse out the results that were, say, the product of specific local conditions and those that might have stemmed from larger trends?
I think when we look at what happened in June overall, I would say, you know, people sort of expected the progressive waves to kind of crest and fall downhill. And actually, progressives did seem to overperform. In the past, people have thought that the progressive movement kind of was limited to the five boroughs. But actually, we saw in Buffalo, we had India Walton with an incredible victory in the mayor's race. In Rochester, two socialists were elected to the city council. And so we're seeing, again, that the progressive movement is beyond just the five boroughs and that progressives are really winning across the board. We also saw, you know, that when you run exciting, progressive, dynamic candidates, like many of the new young, diverse city council members, these candidates win, right? You can't just run someone, put the name progressive on them and expect them to sweep. You actually have to have candidates that understand the community, that are from the community. Someone in particular like India Walton in Buffalo, Tiffany Caban from Queens, Sandy Nurse, who won in Brooklyn, people that are very connected to the community. And finally, I think another lesson that we learned is that, you know, when progressives unite behind a candidate early, we do very well. The issues that we're running on are extremely popular. And when we have someone like Brad Lander, who won as comptroller, or Antonio Reynoso, who won as Brooklyn Borough president, if we get behind these candidates early and consolidate and make sure that everyone is behind one person rather than, you know, a diffuse field of progressives, we do a lot better.
You mentioned issues being popular. What are some of the, I guess, winning issues that will work for progressive candidates in some of these primaries? Because while certain things, especially on like the labor front, you know, talking about working class issues are obviously very popular, other things like that buzzword of defund the police can be much more polarizing.
Again, I think it depends what district you're in. Mm-hmm. I think candidates that were running on largely populist issues of saying we need to have a city that works for working people, that the wealthy are doing well, but poor people, especially during COVID, were struggling, that we need affordable health care, that we need affordable housing, and that we need police that responds to their communities. Those are issues that resonated with voters. And we did have candidates that were saying, you know, we do need to reduce funding for the police and invest in the actual community, candidates like Tiffany Caban, who did extremely well. India Walton herself was saying that we need to reduce funding for the police and make sure that we are investing in not just the police department, but also in community-based services and in healthcare and housing and services that would actually help the community. And I think those candidates did well too. But I think you have to have believable candidates who come from the communities that they're speaking to, right? Someone that can say, I have experience. You've seen me on the streets here. I'm not someone that's just coming in and running for office, but I'm someone that has spent years fighting for this community. Those are people that voters respond to because they can tell when someone's coming in and saying these things and not, it doesn't really mean them.
Not to get too far ahead of ourselves, but in terms of those candidates that can excite people, do you think there's a good bench of those potential candidates moving forward? Or is it the case where these types of candidates, the India Waltons, Tiffany Cabans, sort of emerge out of nowhere and it's hard to predict where they're going to pop up?
I would expect more people to continue running for office that we haven't seen before. I think a lot of people that were frustrated with the mayoral field, it's because we had a somewhat stale group of elected officials from 20 years ago, right? Many of the people that were running, obviously not all of them, were folks that entered politics in 1995 and 2000. And now those are the folks that are running for mayor. the people that are running for city council right now and who are winning are younger, they're more diverse, they're more progressive. We have the first, you know, South Asian city council member, the first openly gay Black woman, the first Muslim woman. These are people that are now entering politics, and in 10, 15, 20 years, we will see a much more diverse and exciting group of experienced progressives running for mayor, Senate, Congress, you know, governor, president, who knows. But I also think there's an effect of when you see people like this winning, it inspires more people to run, right? It's almost the Ocasio effect of people saw that a young Latina bartender who didn't have traditional political experience but could really speak to her community's needs could run and win. And I think she inspired so many other people to run. And now young women, queer people, people of color are seeing it's not just older white men that can be politicians, but that our elected officials can actually look like our communities. And so I think it will have an effect for years to come of more people running like this.
What's your takeaway then from the mayoral primary victory of Eric Adams, who I think could pretty fairly be described as a centrist Democrat?
I mean, you could describe him as a centrist Democrat. I think on some issues, like police reform, this is not someone that was necessarily running as a centrist. I think he was pretty clearly running and saying that for 20, 30 years, he's been fighting for police reform, against police brutality. And I think that really resonated with voters. But again, I think the mayoral field was an example of when progressives don't consolidate early enough, right? We had... And it's exciting to have so many progressives running now because, you know, the issues are so popular. But when we don't have consolidation early on, we end up with a kind of diffused progressive field. And someone like Eric ends up winning. So I think it's another sort of lesson learned that we can't all get behind Maya 2 weeks before Election Day, but that we have to be a little bit more strategic early on.
In case you're just joining us, you're listening to the Capitol Press Room, and we're talking about the June primaries and what they mean with progressive political consultant Monica Klein. Were there any Democratic primary results that surprised you, either for good or bad, as far as progressives were concerned?
I mean, I think the victory of India Walton was incredibly exciting. I don't know that I was surprised because, the Working Families Party was focused so deeply on Buffalo, but I think a win like that is, again, an example of something that really inspires more people to run. I think what happened in the Bronx with a number of progressive women running, you know, Marjorie Velasquez, who won for city council, Amanda Farias, these are women that had run before in these districts and were really shut out by county. They were told that they shouldn't be running, that they should get in line. They had lost their previous primaries and they ran again. And this time, you know, the Bronx kind of understood that politics in the Bronx are changing and that these are women that they had to get behind and support. And so I think the result of what happened in the Bronx and the city council reverberate for years to come in terms of, you know, how what county looks like in terms of who runs for state senate and assembly. I think the Bronx is really, really changing. And you saw the results of that in their city council races.
And that reference to the county, you're talking about the Democratic political machine in the Bronx?
Yes, which, you know, once upon a time was run by Ruben Diaz Sr. and Jr., who are both stepping away from politics. You know, we saw a number of folks in the Bronx that, you know, Joe and I have stepped back. There's a number of folks that once upon a time were running the Bronx. And now we have these very exciting young women who are stepping up to the plate and will now be elected officials there.
Well, pivoting to the future then, when you look at these primaries and where progressive candidates had significant victories, are there areas or races that you think could be ripe for additional victories in 2022 in the state legislature?
There are so many variables that it's a little bit difficult to say, right? We unfortunately still do not have public financing until after 2022. Mm-hmm. The lack of ranked choice voting means once again that we really need to focus on progressive consolidation early. And then the fact that there's redistricting, there's so much that's different from what happened in New York this year. But I think if you look back to the 2020 races, progressives had pickups not just in the five boroughs, but, you know, impressive slates in places like Rochester. So I think there are so many seats across the state that are ripe and ready and in play. And it really just depends who's looking at the map earliest, who's gaming out the flippable seats, who's, you know, consolidating early and making sure that we're investing and raising money and building strong field operations, not just in February or March, but starting, you know, right now.
Well, yeah, we are about 11 months away from the 2022 primary. So do you anticipate we're going to hear some of these challengers emerging this summer? And if they're not, are they already behind the eight ball?
I do think that we'll see challengers come out pretty soon. I think, you know, obviously Congress is different, but we're already seeing congressional challengers announcing right now. I think folks are a little bit, you know, they do want to see what's happening with redistricting. And also, you know, voters don't pay as much attention. We're still getting used to the fact that all of the elections are in June and half of them are not in September. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I think the summer is a little bit of a slower time. People are getting ready, probably more internally, but I do think we'll see a lot of announcements in September and October.
In 2018, a big motivating factor on the left was to try to oust the Independent Democratic Conference senators, a movement that was wildly successful. Six of eight got bounced. And then in 2020, it was seemed to be more responsive to what hadn't gotten done in 2019 and 2020 during Democratic control of the state legislature. As you think about 2022 and what might motivate people, are there any sort of clear issues? Say, is it, you know, a failure to pass the single-payer New York Health Act legislation? Is it failure to move on good cause? Is it failure on criminal justice stuff? What do you see as being the motivation, or is each case unique?
I think there's a couple issues that people will be focused on. Definitely on housing. You know, we just saw good cause passed in Albany. Mm-hmm. So the argument that this is just something that New Yorkers in the city are focused on is obviously not true. And I think there'll be more pressure on that. I think folks that did not aggressively get behind the campaign to raise taxes on the rich or were opposed to it, I think will feel some pressure. And then, you know, we're going to be in the middle of a gubernatorial election with an incredibly unpopular governor, and who chooses to stand with the governor and who chooses to really vocally oppose him will also be a motivating factor. And then obviously, you know, healthcare is a massive issue that progressives have been focused on, that they focused on at the end of the session this year. And I think where the candidates stand on that issue will be interesting as well.
You've piqued my interest by mentioning that gubernatorial election that's right around the corner. So are there any candidates or types of candidates that you think are going to emerge as potential challengers to Cuomo for the Democratic nomination next year?
I mean, we'll see. I think, you know, some candidates have been tweeting, or some potential candidates have been tweeting their potential interest. Obviously, everyone is sort of waiting for the Attorney General's report to come out to see, you know, how bloody Cuomo will be coming out of this report. And I think, you know, the clock is really ticking. This is someone that still has at least $20 million in the bank. It takes some time to raise that amount of money. And while he is unpopular and voters don't necessarily want to reelect him, someone does need to emerge and, again, consolidate voters behind an alternative and really start raising significant amounts of money now if they want to beat him, if he does choose to run again.
Was that tweeting a reference to New York City public advocate Jumaane Williams?
Yes, it was.
Well, we've been speaking with Monica Klein. She is a founding partner of Seneca Strategies, a progressive political consulting firm, and she ran this year's campaign in Albany to increase taxes on wealthy New Yorkers. Monica, thank you so much for making the time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Support for the Capitol Press Room is provided by the New York State AFL-CIO, a federation of 3,000 unions fighting for working people by keeping New York State union strong. UnionStrongNY.com for more information.